Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address. Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the China Shop, home of the Band of Traders. I am your host, Kyle, and I've enlisted Baba Yaga over here to help me out with today's project. Just a real deep dive into scalping with two-year flipper here. Before we dive in, let's get the speedy version of the promo stuff out of the way. You can email us, bandoftraderspodcast@gmail.com. There's a free Discord server, at Financial and Up to One on Twitter. All right, let's go.
Let's do it.
So I'd like to kick things off just with like a proper definition of scalping, because I don't think that people really understand what it actually is, at least what you're doing.
So how I was taught to scalp, I mean, leaving all the stuff from after working for Chip, after I worked for Chip, before I went on my own again, I actually spent 3 months with a very successful prop group. That's where I was in the room with the biggest S&P trade, mini S&P trader. I was in room with somebody who I consider the best scalper I've ever been around in my life. And what the individual who taught me how to scalp, and mind you, I did this on a live account with TT. He said, I want you to do 50 scalps a day, 50 trades in the mini S&P, all one lots. And I want your P&L at the end of the day to be zero. Don't want you to have a P&L. I don't want you to have a positive or negative P&L.
Wow.
I want you to execute 50 trades and I want you to be zero. If you get the edge, scratch it. If you get the edge, scratch it. I don't care. If you lose, figure out how to scratch it and get out. Mm-hmm. Like this is what was ingrained in my head. And scalping was different then. I mean, everyone has to remember, I don't remember what the mini S&P was trading back in. God, that had to be in like 2005 or so, or 2004, whatever it was. But, you know, let's call, I don't even know what it was, but definitely not the ranges you see today. You're not going to be getting, what are the spoos? They move 100 hand, will they go 100 points in a day?
Not typically, but occasionally you get those.
Okay, I mean, but there's significant moves in the spoos. Scalping back then, it wasn't like that. So it was very organized, but he had me, like every day for a week straight, I had to scratch 51 lots every day.
So what was the point of that? Is that just to get you practicing scratching in general?
It was basically just getting me, teaching me in, out, edge, out, edge, out, edge, out. He was basically trying to teach me how to catch edges. Mm-hmm. And I'll explain how I work to gain edges in the market. But that was his whole objective, was teaching me how to scratch a trade, because scratching a trade might be the most important skill one learns when you're a scalper. You have to know when you're wrong, even with the edge. You need to know, like if something doesn't add up, if something doesn't line up, you have to know, get out. I don't care if you have the edge. I don't care if you only have 50 left to trade out for a winner. If you know you're wrong, get out. And that was the point of the exercise.
How long did you do that exercise for?
I did that for a week, and then it was right around that time I realized I didn't really want to work for anyone. It wasn't because of, I mean, no, it would have been a phenomenal group to work for. I mean, these guys, they were one of the most successful trading groups. They still are. They're one of the few remaining prop groups that actually hire real traders, not mathematicians. Mm-hmm. You know, which a lot, you know, I know a young kid trying to get in with a prop firm, and he was talking to me. This kid's a super talented kid, ridiculously smart with trading. And he's like, and he asked me, Jeff, what's the point of this? I'm like, dude, I like the math questions that they gave him to do. I'm like, dude, I couldn't. I mean, I would bomb it. Like, I wouldn't have a prayer at passing that. Huh. And nor do I think you really need to become a, you know, successful scalper.
Is that mostly just probably to weed people out from the prospective pool?
You know, I don't know what groups are looking for nowadays. I really don't. I wish I did know what they were looking for, but I don't, like, they would never, nobody would hire a trader like me. Mm-hmm. They just wouldn't. No.
Hmm.
No. I'm too seasoned. They couldn't, they want somebody young and dumb. For lack of a better term, they might be highly intelligent people, but they want them dumb in the market sense.
Right. They want them.
I'm way too seasoned. Mm-hmm. They're going to be like, well, what'd you do that for? Why did I call out the Fed funds? Like, remember, that was the FOMC day the last time we talked. Yep. Those were trading, 95? They were trading 95.50, 95.10 right now. I mean, that's a significant move.
I have no idea how the Fed funds move. I've never looked at that product.
It's a 50 basis point. That, like, nobody's believing the cuts.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Like, I mean, how the market moved, you would have guessed we were going to hike, I guess. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not as significant a move as that. Because if they hiked, I mean, all hell would break loose in this market. I don't think people are, but they're not going to hike. I mean, they're holding the line. I could say whatever I want, but they're just holding the line that there's still going to be two cuts this year.
So I'm going to ask here, why Fed funds versus SOFR?
Because I have a membership in the Fed funds.
Gotcha. Okay. And then here,
it's the only reason.
A topic on scratches here. Would you find scratches when you don't get a free look, but still see a lift timer? Or said another way, if you get an uptick, but do no volume, but there was a lifter at ticks below you that you think would get you out.
So let's go back how I even get the edge. And because this is the most important thing when it comes to just as scalping. One of the most important things anyone can do is, we'll just take the 30 year for right now, because that's what I'll trade. Mm-hmm. So I have the 30 year set up. Well, right now I've got the 30 year. I line up my Dom perfect. And I have, so how I line up my Dom, you know, it's in the middle. My order bar is to the right side where I enter the orders. Mm-hmm. And to the left, on the left side, I have the last traded column all the way to my left, right next to it. And I mean, I can't stress this enough. The window is the exact same size as my scalping window. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to have what market I think is most beneficial to me. Right now, if I'm trading the 30 year, the only two markets I'm looking at are the ultra bond and the 10 year ultras. Mm-hmm. I don't care what the twos, fives, or tens are doing. They're all around, they're dead to me. Don't care. I don't care what the spoos are doing. Though I do have what the spoos are up on the day in like a little corner. So I know how many points they're up on the day. Mm-hmm. I do know that. So that's all I'm looking at. My whole thing when I scalp is finding what is correlating with the bonds. I don't care what market you trade. You need to know every correlation, whether it's trial and error. Like, this is why I'm not successful with the NASDAQ. I don't know what else moves the NASDAQ mm-hmm. without looking at individual stocks. And all of a sudden, do I want to look at NVIDIA? Do I want to look at, like,
right. Yeah, the Mag 7.
What are you going to look at? Like, all of a sudden, I'm going to look at like nine different things. And I don't know really what weighs on what. I always know what is the driver in the 30 year. If anyone can look. Their times, the 30 years, are polar opposite. You know, they're opposites of the stock market. Mm-hmm. And there are other times, if the NASDAQ rips up, the 30s rip up. And if you really pay attention, you'll notice exactly what times of the day that that occurs.
Oh.
Because there are times of the day that they occur.
Bob has been diving into some of that stuff too.
And it's fascinating. I mean, I don't always use it, but there was a time, what was it? I want to say it was 2 days ago. I don't know. The NASDAQ just ripped higher and the bonds just followed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just one of the easiest trades. It's about just finding correlations within whatever you're scalping. I don't care what you scalp. The market's irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
Finding correlations. The most important thing scalping is staying organized. So like I said, I'm going to have to the left of my screen. So all I look at on the Dom and on the 10-year ultra and on the ultra bond, I look at the bid. I look at the offer. I don't care what the price is. I get rid of the price column because it's taking up real estate that I don't care about. Because
mm-hmm.
what the market's trading is, the price is irrelevant to me in those markets. I'm not laying off.
Right.
I'm just out and outright scalping the bonds. So I want real estate. So I have the bid, the offer, and last traded quantity. And then I have the accumulative volume of the numbers on that day. And I have those lined up on the right side because I want them as close to my last traded price in the bonds. So once I enter a trade, I do not recenter the market.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have the bonds on and I sold, and now the 10-year ultra and they each go down one or two ticks, I'm not recentering because the second I recenter, I lose focus on what they have moved versus the bonds. And now I'm going to be like, well, wait, did they go down one tick, two ticks? I recentered it, so I don't know.
So everything's like almost mechanical then. You have
it's, yep. It's all got to be lined up to a T.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all it is. Just like on the right side of my screen, I do not pay attention to time and sales in the 10-year ultra and the ultra bond. I don't care. I don't care if somebody's absorbing anything. It's irrelevant to me. I just want to watch the order flow on the chart. What are they doing? Which mm-hmm. direction is it going? Because my view is if you're concentrating on one market scalping, taking your focus off the time and sales on that market is just going to screw you up because you're going to mix up the time and sales between markets.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
So if we are on this adventure for the next roughly 45 minutes or so to like really understand your approach and both in like a systematic way, I'd love to explore like even before that part of it and before the executing trades and some of the things you look for, like when you sit down at the desk in the morning, what is your if you don't mind sharing, like what is your, because I read you tweeted the other day that even though you're trading one tick at a time, basically that you always have a general idea of what you expect or anticipate on a bigger picture from a bigger picture, like as a plan
on the day.
Exactly. Yeah. So when you sit down in the morning, what is that process? What does that look like a little bit before we jump into like clicking the button? What is your get to the desk, sit down, fire up the machine? How do you do that part?
So the nice thing is I pretty much come up with what I think the game plan is going to be the night of. Like when I leave here, I'll leave my desk at 3:15. I'm like, all right, the bonds are trading. Today they were trading about, I want to say right where they are now, maybe 1:15:06. So, you know, give or take, then they sold off a little. So based on that, I always go overnight, what do I expect the bonds to do? I always say 10 ticks each direction. So when I come in, if they close that, say they close at 06, I'm going to say, hey, a normal night, you shouldn't really see more than a 20 tick move in the bonds.
Okay.
On a normal night. That's just how I picture it. And then, yeah, I mean, it's kind of obvious which way I lean with the bonds. I mean, it's no different than my Fed funds. I mean, if I think the Fed funds were overbought at you know, 95, 50. And I kept saying, hey, these are mispriced. I'm selling, selling, selling. Obviously, I think the bonds are going down as well. I don't have as great of an understanding on why the bonds didn't move nearly as much as the funds did. I mean, the funds are, you know, way more priced with the Fed.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think that I would have expected the bonds to probably be in the 113 handle by now. Wow. So like I said at the beginning, like I think I tweeted the beginning of the week, I said, hey, we've got CPI, we've got PPI, we've got auctions. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw 113 handle this week.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what day I tweeted that, Monday or Tuesday. And you know what? We're in the 114 handles. And when I mean 113 handle, I just want to see it tick one time. I'm not calling a trade like load the boat at 113. No, I'm just saying, hey, get there. And, you know, that's my skill set. That ends right there. But yeah, so when I come in, that's why I don't come in. I don't start looking at the bonds until 9 a.m. Mm-hmm. I let all the economic numbers play out now.
And you're central time. So that's half hour after close or after open.
Yes. So I come in, 9 a.m. is typically the last economic number in, you know, Chicago. I mean, you know, yeah, auctions are 3 hours later, so we can delve into that. But for the most part, I want all the noise I want out of the market. Basically, I'm coming in, I kind of want to come into an established range.
You kind of want all the people who have to execute out of the way?
I kind of want you know what, I don't really like trading new highs and new lows.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a ton of noise there on new highs and new lows. I'll obviously trade them because you can't control what the market's, you know, what the time of any market is doing. But I don't want to trade. I don't want to be ripping lows and buying highs. Like, I'm probably a better short scalper, but when we're on the highs, if we're going to be ripping highs and ripping lows, I'm a better scalper going up. Okay. On new highs than I am a seller going low, because I'm more calculated on the way up, and on the way down, I'm just too aggressive. And I find I'm ahead of myself because I think we're going to be going down. So I want to kind of force it sometimes without seeing things.
Does that have to do with just the different ways that the markets move? Like it go up slower than they go down kind of thing. So you kind of have to be quicker.
It does obviously grow. I mean, everyone's more apt to sell way faster than they are to buy. So I find scalping at the highs is easier for me than scalping at the lows. Again, I know my game. Like I could dissect how I scalp. Like I know where, you know, if you gave myself a report card on everything, I could say, hey, here are my three main weaknesses right here. Mm-hmm. These three right here. And I think every scalper needs to know that. And anyone who says they don't have a weakness is full of, you know what?
I feel like I have only weaknesses sometimes.
Just like, you know, go ahead.
I was going to say, so you sit down at the desk in the morning, you have a general expectation of the expansion or whatever that you would anticipate would be normal for an overnight session. You have a general bias based off maybe your outlook on, you know, Fed fund stuff and just the market as a whole. Are there any other like market generated levels or certain things other than new highs and lows that you use to add some context when you're kind of getting everything ready to roll?
Well, we've talked privately. I mean, you know, I'll tell people like, you know, you have to do your own homework. I'm not here to show anything, but there are three numbers control the bonds on every level. I mean, I've shared this with you privately. Like
mm-hmm.
people need to learn this stuff themselves. Yeah. But mm-hmm. those three numbers are a huge part of my strategy on every day. I want to see the activity around those numbers.
Yep.
Because I know we hit one, we're going to hit this one. We hit this one. What are we doing there? Are we going to continue to the next one, or are we going to shoot right back down?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, that makes sense.
So those three numbers are huge to my scalping. And quite frankly, that's why I don't have, I literally have a chart and I have three lines on it, you know, horizontal lines. Mm-hmm. At those three numbers, at their, you know, white, I have a just a blue background chart, and I just have three. It's like boom, boom, boom. And when I come in, I watch how did they react to those numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's more than you would pay more attention through the moments of the day on things like that than necessarily like an open range, like the opening 30-second range or the overnight London range. Those things don't really factor in for you as much as some of the price points and the activity around them.
No, they don't. I think that's a very big trade with the minis and the NASDAQ. I'm sure it does. I'm aware of what the opening range is. Like, I do have those generated on a different chart. Mm-hmm. So I'm well aware of what they are. I'll tell people how I use that. I guess if you were going to describe my scalping style, I am a counter trend scalper. I don't care if the market's running up. In general, I'm going to try to counter the move every way up. I'm going to try to look. These guys are too aggressive here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to hit it. I'm going to sell it. They're early. I'm going to sell it. Just like I'm early when I say I'm selling, mm-hmm. Too strong on the downside. I look to counter trend moves.
Okay.
That's how I scalp. And which is why I'm not a successful NASDAQ S&P guy.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you try to counter trend the NASDAQ,
yeah,
you're in trouble.
Right.
And that's a huge weakness of mine. Like, if I'm looking to counter trend something, well, counter trending something in the bonds is easy. Like, a typical day in the bonds is like a 30 tick, a 1 point range, expanded a couple more ticks, but it's only going to trade 35, 40 ticks in a day. This isn't the NASDAQ where, I saw something today. I wanted a sell. I'm like, you know what? And I didn't pull the trigger, thank God. And I'm like, you know what? I haven't traded it all day. Just don't throw the trade out there. Oh, dear God. I mean, if I would have counter trade, I would have done three trades and it would have been like, I'd have been destroyed.
Right.
even in the micro NASDAQ, I'd have been destroyed. I mean, it was a wicked, I'm looking at the run right now. I think it went from 240 to 480, or, give or take that looks like the move. It was a 200 point move.
Yeah, it was big.
If you try to counter trend that, like I'm looking, I don't see where it stopped anywhere. I don't really see it hesitating.
Yeah.
It hesitated right thing before I closed out mine. Oh God, it was like somewhere in the 40s and it wasn't very long either. I immediately regretted closing that position.
So then outside that, so I have a bias. And then the other thing I do, so I'm looking at the ultras, the 10-year and the ultra bond. And then I can't tell people how strongly I use deltas. Mm-hmm. So the other day I remember the time was 11:15 in the morning.
Oh, is it that post you tweeted showing the delta absorption?
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. So this was at 11:15. This was on, this was Monday. So Monday at 1:16:29, I'm watching the delta. And this just comes experience, but why I use the deltas, I just watch out of the clear blue sky, somebody hit 2,500. As soon as that guy hit it, I'm like, that's a puke. I just knew it was a puke right away. So I'm like, I want to reverse here. So when I looked on the chart, like, now it wasn't an easy trade. 28s traded in the 11:15 to 11:30 and then 11:30 to 11:45. They traded 132 net times. It was very difficult to get above those 28s and 29s. I mean, 29s and 30s. But as soon as we took off from there, I texted somebody. I mean, those things were 15, 20 ticks higher by 1:15. Now, that's not how I can trade the bonds, but I just knew right then it was a bad hit. Then today, if you would have looked at the bonds, it was very confusing in the bonds. This was at, I think the price was 11 today. I'll look back on my delta.
Is this on ZB or UB?
On ZB. So ZB, here's the sell-off. So we get down to 06. It wasn't 10. Oh, it was 11. 11's traded about 5,000 times. And I couldn't tell you what they were doing. Like, I couldn't tell you who was the aggressor there. It was very confusing to me. Like, for somebody who pays attention as much as I do, I was in utter shock at those prices.
So the last time that we talked to you, we talked a little bit about timers, and it sounded like that was like a huge factor in the way that you trade and you scout, but it sounds like maybe that's not your only trick in your book necessarily.
No, it's not. It's not my only trick. I mean, it is one of my tricks. I'm acutely aware of what's going on with timers. Like, I know every day, I know what they're going to do on the close this week. They've done the same thing every day on the close this week. It's the same quantity. The guy starts at 154 and he stops at 159.59. I know exactly what he's going to do. It's my job whether I can take advantage of that. Like, I know how aggressive they were. I actually took, now today's close, I played it poorly today. She took a two tick hit on the trade today. I was wrong. The sellers were just so strong. I just got steamrolled, and it was one of those things. Like, as soon as I missed the first tick, I'm like, and I puked the low of the move, but I was like, you know, as soon as I missed it, I watched how aggressive the sellers were. I'm like, you know what? It's best just to eat the two ticks and close it out and move on. Again, goes back to what I was taught. Like, I was wrong. And I only wanted to lose a tick on it, but I sucked it up and I just said, look, and I puked it, the absolute low of it. It was the low at the time. I took a two tick hit on the trade. You just have to move forward. Cause if you sulk in the trade,
yeah,
your next 10 trades are bad.
Ain't that the truth? I kind of want to go back to a little bit to the exercise that you talked about.
Shoot.
So kind of walk me through like how that process actually worked. You enter a trade in, like what's the time frame?
If I were going to teach a kid, someone to scalp right now, I would tell them, I think I don't mess around enough on Cunningham, but somebody told me Cunningham is a great place to scalp. And so is Sierra.
Oh, the platform. Okay.
CTS, I think the platform. You know what? Here, the most important thing you can do when you scalp is you want something that gives you the absolute worst fills. Because if you have something, if there's 1,000 there and you're trying to get long on the bid, you put a one lot there. Well, you're behind 1,000. Well, if it trades a 5 lot and you get filled, you're not learning anything because it's a fill that's unobtainable in the market.
Yep. I learned that lesson.
So like I said, I trade with, I have a Sierra SIM chart up, SIM platforms, because during the day, I don't manage my Fed funds. I let my they play out. I don't want to manage them, but I want to look at it. Cause if I see any stupidity, I can just click into a different workspace. And it's up in 2 seconds. So I want to watch it, but I don't want to watch it. Like, I don't want to be able to trade it because I'll screw up my positions.
Yeah. It's something that's accessible, but it's not taking up screen space to distract you from.
Right. So I just have a little thing. I say, okay, what's going on here? And to be honest, the Jan Fed funds, like if I didn't have a position on, there's nothing I saw this week that would tell me anything. Like, I haven't said, ooh, what an idiot, like what a stupid play. I haven't seen that in the Fed funds. Like, it's just continuing the move that I thought was going to happen. You know, sometimes I get lucky with that stuff. So I would concentrate on Sierra, Cunningham. I don't use TT Sim only because I'm too lazy to set up a screen. I like my TT how I have it. I don't want to create a new screen, and I don't want to make a mistake on TT is basically what I'm saying. Hey, I thought I was in SIM there. Hey, I was in just stupid. And I know the difference between SIM and whatnot, but you know, if I'm not paying attention, it would happen more in the Fed funds on a position trade that are like, wait, I'm not live here. Or wait, I'm live. I'm not on SIM. Like, so I don't mess around with TT SIM. I do like Sierra's though. I think Sierra is a great sim to learn on. I think it's a phenomenal one.
I was going to say, you got to be careful with how you set up that sim mode, because there are settings where it'll give you insta fills when you should not be getting them. I learned that lesson too.
On Sierra?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So Sierra, the only nice thing I have on Sierra is I have a max click size of 5 on Sierra. I'm allowed to put in 20 contracts, but I can only go 5. Sierra is my secondary. If my TT were to go down, Sierra is how I get out.
Yeah. Okay.
So like in the Fed funds, I can do a max click of 5, but I could get up to 100 off if I had to. And I don't really need it in the Fed funds. If all hell's breaking loose, my funds are going to, I probably want it on when all hell's breaking loose. I'm not really worried about that position, but the bonds could get ugly if I had a 20 lot on and it was running away from me and I couldn't get out. I mean, you could lose a lot of ticks there.
Yeah.
That's putting it mildly. Right. So if somebody was wanting to mess around with scalping, Sierra Chart's a great place to do it. And Kyle noted, make sure you check that you don't have like Instafill. And then from that point, maybe what would be a couple of the things that you would either that you, I know we talked about timers, there's some specific nuance of price and stuff like that, but if you were advising someone that was trying to mess with it, what would you advise them to look for, and kind of what would be some of the parameters you think would be important for them to have in place as far as risk goes? What have you learned about that through your career that you would be very motivated to make sure that you passed on to someone?
So I think the most important thing, actually, before you even learn the timers and all that, the most important things is understanding a correlation. It's very difficult just to read a DOM of any market. It's very difficult without something guiding you. You always need a trigger, something that helps you see where an edge can be. But I would explain to somebody not to go over the top, don't get too complicated. The most important thing is we'll just use the 30s for an example. We'll put the 30 DOM here, set up your box perfect, put your time and sales. Again, this is everyone's preference. I like my time and sales on the right side of the screen for when I trade the 30 year, just like I like my order book on the right side. That's my preference. It's opposite of what TT does. That was a custom thing that I like. It works better for me over there. I don't know why. I just like it over there. And then I have my columns, you know, my two DOMs to the left of the other two markets. And literally, that's all you stare at, those four things. And I wouldn't look at timers. I wouldn't suggest people even to start looking at figuring out what a timer is. You figure out the correlation first, because ultimately, timers aren't there every day. A correlation very well should be there every day. Correlations might change. You might need, correlations always change. But you better find a correlation when you trade. You can't, it's.
And when you say correlations, can you kind of expound a little bit more on that? Do you mean like to another market, or yes, do you just mean a specific action that happens?
No, just, you know, like what's happening here? Is the ultra bond leading the bonds? Is the 10-year ultra leading the bonds? Is there a trigger in there?
Mm-hmm.
I want anything when I scalp, I'm looking for any little edge anyone can see. I don't care if anyone can see it. As long as I see it and I have confidence in it, I'm going to execute a trade off something I see. And that's the hardest thing. What I like about Sierra is, you know, the clicks are a little slower. So I like that. So when anyone's learning, they should only learn with a one lot. I mean, if I would teach anyone to scalp, hey, you know why the one lot works? Because it gives you a true P&L at the end of the day. You know, well, I'm minus $312.50. I lost 10 trades. Every trade was a one lot. I have minus 10 trades. I was up $312.50. Well, okay. I executed 60 trades. I made on 10 of them.
Right.
But at the end of the day, I don't care what happened in between. The bottom line is you made on 10 of 60 or you lost on 10 of 50. That's why I suggest learning on a one lot.
Yep.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.
That's such a good point. Just pause for a disclaimer. We had this conversation in the room the other day about discussing P&L versus and using points to kind of talk about, you know, your, like, if we're going to discuss how successful a day was, for one, discussing that with points is a little more accessible because you might have one person trading a couple micros, one person trading a couple minis in the NAS. Well, if I said I made, you know, $5,000 today, that's great. That's a lot of points. But maybe the person trading micros made $3,000 and they were trading micros. So as far as points just settles everything. They could have had a much better day, P&L. And also I think like the idea of trading ones in what you're talking about, or just in trading in general, like how many bullets you're firing. Because, you know, let's say I'm normally trading three or four, but if I see something great, I could lose three or four stops. And then if there's like an A-plus setup and I hit that with six or eight, it sweeps that mistake under the rug. But I love the kind of level playing field, especially in learning a skill of like, it's one lot. You know, there's no magic eraser. You can't put on four and clean up a mistake. It's a one lot, and that's what you're, and you're keeping it simple, both from a performance analytics side and from an execution side. So I guess the disclaimer is when you see massive P&Ls or people post big P&Ls or things like that, for anyone listening, like there's an efficiency that should be considered in all of that. And number of contracts and efficiency is way more important than total points or even total points or total P&L. Efficiency of what you're trading is going to be the thing that over the long haul is going to be
when you're learning. It's all about consistency. You need to keep as many variables the same, and position size is an easy one to lock in at one number and not change. And because, like you said, you start upping the size and you can start erasing mistakes pretty easily, but that doesn't help you.
That's the perfect explanation. Like,
I love that, man.
If you're doing the NASDAQ, you know, and you're doing the micro, it doesn't matter which one you're doing, but if you're doing a one lot, you're down, I'm down $400, whatever it is. And then you're like, holy, I like this trade. I'm going to do a 10 lot. And next thing you know, come on, a 10 lot would add up. You know, it'd be like, boom, boom, boom. You're like, hey, I'm up $2,800 today. I killed it. Well, did you really kill it? Or do you get, and hey, the ultimate barometer on anything, the end of the day, the only thing that matters is your P&L. I mean, I can go back to some of my best trading days ever were days I finished with a negative P&L because I got in such a hole. I mean, I can remember one day I got run over on a spread and I started the day 50 in the hole. I was down 50, like out of the gate by 7:24. I was down 50,000. And at the end of that day, I finished down seven. I'm like, all right, that's a phenomenal day.
Yeah.
I didn't panic. And there were other days where you'd be like, well, how do you make on that? You know, there are times that some of my best days ever were, well, I got lucky on a lot of, yes, I was out there. Yes, every decision was right, but there's still a component of luck in everything. There was a day I had a really good day and I got out of a trade and I don't know why somebody filled me because it made zero sense, but they let me out. And like 2 seconds later, if I still had that trade, it would have been a disaster of a day, but I had a phenomenal day. I know how I traded.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, you know, you would say, well, you lost seven on this day and this day you made, let's just make it up 35. Well, I'd always take the $35,000. Well, of course, but it's not always
the price.
It's not always about the that's a fine line, you know. It is always about the money because the only way you stay in the game is if you make money. But If you go over everything, I'm like, if I could trade, like, I realized the mistake I made on the day I started minus 50, and I was able to wiggle it all the way down. So I obviously traded phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like, to me, you know, because if you take the 50 out, you're like, wow, what a day that was. It was actually more than one of my better, you know, but you lost on the day. So that's what's nice about keeping it as a one lot. I think that's super important. Like, when people are learning, that's what they need to do. It's got to be the same size. All you want to do is 1-1-1-1. End of the day, how many trades did you do? Because if you're scalping, we should get back into this. Like, if you're scalping and you're going to scalp from 7:20 to 2:00 in the bonds, if you're not doing 200 trades, you're not scalping.
There you go. I was going to say, can you give us that your perspective definition of scalping, but you just did it. That's it. I mean,
you know, people say I'm scalping. I don't understand. I mean, and it's not a brat. It's not anything. Like, I'm a click happy trader. I want to click. I want to be involved in the market. The more I'm involved in the market, the more I see. I adjust my size all the time. I say my average order click is 20. That's absolutely true. But I constantly change my click size every day. You know, the average order is 20, but I use my kids' birthdays all the time. I'm very superstitious that way. And I use my kids' birthdays because I know HFTs are out there that look for certain click sizes. I played that game back in the 2 year. They knew every order I was clicking in. Every single order they knew I was clicking in for a good 3 months. And it was a rough 3 months.
I did want to actually ask you about that last time we talked, was if you were worried about people trying to find your trades or try to piggyback off of you.
Not, you know, nowadays I really don't care. I'm really not big enough anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for the most part, I'm not doing, I'm not going to lie. Like, hey, there's only 31 days in a month. So all my order clicks are always under 31. I can say that. So I'm really not that big of a trader anymore. Like, I was never a big trader. Like, I never looked to enter the market with 500 or 1,000.
Yeah, all your volume is spread out.
My volume spread out, you know, except when you go back to the 2 year. Yeah, I mean, but I didn't control everything in the 2 year. There was the K algo component to it. So yeah, I threw the size out there. I didn't know how much I was ever going to get.
Right.
Sometimes I get it all. Sometimes I get a one lot. Other times I get 2,000. I manage what I got. And the most important thing, going back to why you, when you learn to scalp, you do a one lot, because every trade is a one lot. It doesn't matter what size you have on. You have to treat every trade the same. That's the most important part. And I understand money's part of the equation. I always know what my P&L is. But the most important thing is to manage the trade. Don't manage the money when you're scalping. Manage the trade. Is it the right trade? Then worry about the money. And when you do that with one lots and you keep doing it with one lots, one lot, one lot, one lot, then you go up. Now I'm doing two lots. Go to four lots. As long as you're managing the trade right, you'll be fine. You'll do everything right.
Sorry to keep harping back on this one, but the exercise with the scratching, are there any other exercises or recommendations you'd have for people to practice in order to try to get better muscle memory?
I'm just always, you know, there's a lot of things people like to do with traders. You know, a lot of traders, I knew a group, you had to be a genius at chess to be hired by this group. They only wanted guys who were just ridiculously smart because they can plan out the moves. Like, I want people that can click fast. Like one of the things like I always did growing up, I was a phenomenal Game Boy Tetris player.
Oh, yes. I remember that. I had one of those as a kid too.
And it was how fast I could click the buttons. What was your strategy? I would always start on level 9 and I'd always be like, hey, I want to get all the way up to level 10 straight on Tetrises.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to, it's like boom, boom, boom. Like, but it's consistency. How fast can you move? How fast can you move? How quick can you do everything? I want games that are quick, 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 quick. Move as fast as you can, because those are the things that make a difference. Trading, how fast can you click a mouse? I always do the test. How many times can you click in a second?
I have no idea.
I'm not as quick as I was 5 years ago, but I'm within a click of it.
That's crazy.
So quick twitch muscles is what it sounds like are another good thing to build.
Those are things I look for. I mean, I can show anyone how to scale. I can teach anyone how to scale. Whether they have the discipline to do it is something else. But I can teach anyone to be a successful scalper. It's whether they want to put the time in. Like when I sit down and I scalp and I'm in a zone, I don't care what's going on around me. I can literally see the market play out. I mean, I could literally see exact, like if I'm that into in a zone, I can literally see how the market's going to play out. I know what's going on with the orders. I could see the order flow. This is the bonds. This isn't the NASDAQ. It's not the SPOOs. There's not a ton of factors here. It's the bonds. There's only X amount of factors.
You can't get away with not recentering your DOM on NASDAQ.
No, right.
Yeah.
I mean, in the bonds, I can. And I could just sit there and I could tell you exactly how it's going to play out. It's just like one of the timers going through in the bonds this week is one of those orders I explained to you earlier, the last time we talked.
Yeah.
He's going at a specific time. I know the 6 times he's going to go during the day. I know the exact minutes he's going during the day to the exact second. I know when he's going to execute that order because I'm that into a zone. And you have to be dedicated to do that.
Yeah.
If you're not dedicated, if you're not willing to stare at the DOM for 5 straight hours without taking your eye off of it, you're not going to be a successful scalper.
Yeah. In light of that, like, when you're thinking of someone who's maybe interested in scalping and in light of the DOM and time and sales, you know, obviously pretty key components, and then being aware of the delta. When you say stare at the DOM, I would assume that most people have had the experience where they stare at the DOM till and they can justify a trade in any direction. Because it, especially with NASDAQ or faster moving market or something, but not that the bonds don't sometimes really pick up pace. Would you say that you're definitely, as you're staring at that, you're looking for the anomalies, right? Like you're looking for the things that stand out, that don't look like what you've just been watching for the last 35 minutes. And there's where potentially an opportunity lies for a scalp type entry. And it's that it's having the awareness of that and like being willing to stick to that standard of what will click you in. And there's nothing but time, it sounds like, for someone to really learn that, correct?
I couldn't explain that better. That's exactly what scalping is right there. It's like, why do you stare at the DOM? What doesn't make sense? Something just happened that doesn't make sense to how the whole day is. Everything's been going. Why'd that guy do that? What happened right there?
Okay.
Yeah. Like, okay. Well, yeah. Yeah. I'll say this, like I did take a little foray into some random date replays in the NASDAQ looking for anomalous type time and sales activity and delta and watching the DOM and stuff. And it's very interesting. If you've been trading for a while, I feel like you'll notice some things. Now, the scalping life is not the life for me. I mean, I had some real fun success in practice, like demo account scalping NASDAQ. And
kind of talk about what you were doing with that too. Let's see.
Yeah. Well, I was going to, it's to the point of what he's been talking about. So, you know, we're moving aggressively in one direction where, and we catch a bid. And then instead of catching a bid that runs up and then just melts off, you catch a bid where it just seems like there's this ever present. I was watching order size. So I was looking for consistency in order size and repetition on time and sales of a certain size coming in certain batches. And it just, you know, you would see it if you were looking at a chart because you would see the pace. But if you were just looking at the chart, you would just see pace. You wouldn't see what created that pace. And what I found in the NASDAQ is there's it's almost like, you know, those fireworks that are like a string of like 100, you just light one fuse and it's like
black cats.
Yeah. I would see, and you've probably seen this too, watching NASDAQ, like order sizes of like threes to like sixes. And it's like a waterfall of those orders popping. I mean, just and it's the responsiveness of the market to those orders as well. The offer is just lifting out of the way, and that little firework bid is like the igniter. That if you're talking about scalping NASDAQ for a couple points, you know, 3 to 5 points, there's edge in that. If you are disciplined enough to wait for that type of activity to happen in kind of a spot that's key, you know, you come into a new swing low. Again, to his point, it's almost easier to backside scalp. So you come into a new low, you get the benefit, which is probably what you're seeing on time of sales, of people closing out short positions, but you can scalp that 5-point rotation up, you know, and with a 10 tick stop or 8 tick stop in NASDAQ, because the water is flowing. I mean, the river is flowing that way. No one is dumping onto the bid in those moments either. Like the time in sales is just solid blue, and they're just lift, 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 lift. And now it doesn't last forever. Again, it's a 5 to 9 point rip right there. And then it's right back to what was happening before. But I wonder, like, are those the type of scenarios that you're talking about taking advantage of in a different way, maybe in the bonds, right?
That's exactly it. I mean, finding like what you just described there in the NASDAQ, finding those, if you can find those orders, there's so much money. If you know, hey, this guy comes in, he buys this bulk, it's only going to go, what you said, 8 points. It doesn't matter. There's a lot of money in the NASDAQ if you catch that move. I mean, boom. I mean, that's a quicker move than I can ever imagine in the bonds. Like, you know, you put in a – what I do like about the NASDAQ is it did a 3-lot. I mean, so you're at, what, 15 bucks a point, right?
I mean, 15 a tick. 15 a tick, yeah.
Okay. That adds up fast.
Yeah, 60 a handle, 300 for 5 points.
And you grab 4 or 5 handles – it's like, boom.
Yep.
Again, my problem with the NASDAQ, or my problem with anything, is I'm just too click happy. Even the day I had that was a good day, dude, I was scalping within 3 to 5 points, maybe even a little tighter than that. I didn't have anything. There wasn't anything big. I just happened to catch what you said. I looked at the order, like, I was catching order flow and I was like, oh, I see this. I'm going to go with it. I see this. I'm going to go with it. I'm going to see this. I'm going to go with it. Hey, got luck. I don't want to say I got lucky on the day, but yeah, you got lucky. Like, you caught every order flow. My timing was perfect on the day.
Yeah. And with scalping, what I realized is it really does come down to, like you were talking, I think some people would probably laugh or roll their eyes at the idea of how fast can you click the button. But when those anomalies start to appear, those orders are coming through within milliseconds of each other. So when you recognize that, like, and that was the other key thing I noticed, was that the orders, they come through in these, it's like there's so little time between those smattering of buys that were, I was mainly scalping the long side, but the smattering of buys that would show up, like, it was milliseconds between them, just da, 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 da. I mean, I had the audio cues going and it just deafening, you know, just bling, 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 bling. It's like the audio cues couldn't even keep up with them. But there is an element of, like, if you don't act like as soon as that starts to unfold, the likelihood that you don't get filled in 5 to 6 points or whatever you're scalping NASDAQ, if you were, you know, if you have a death wish, then you're scalping NASDAQ. And, but like, it, you would really, like, I would see, like, if you wait until it's like, oh, wow, look at what just happened. Let me now join in. Like, you're now the orders that are about to get ran through the other way. Like, it's the pace of it was crazy. I mean, it, like you said, your timing is great. Then it's going to work out really well if you're buying in the right spots when that stuff, when those anomalies show up. But if your timing is not great, or you don't get a good fill, or you're not having a lucky stretch, like, you'll get hammered. I mean, it'll be, you know, it'll be 10 tick stop, 10 tick stop, and 10 tick stops add up when you're trading 3 to 5 contracts on the NASDAQ. It doesn't take many before you're kind of feeling the pain.
You feel the pain on a one lot. You can feel the pain and be like, wait, how'd I just lose that yeah. much money again?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought I had a one lot on.
And it's gone.
Am I down $700 right now? Yeah. When you, so when you're scalping through a day, another question around this idea, you're looking for those anomalies in the time and sales. You're looking for anomalies with Delta. You're looking for anomalies on the DOM. You're looking for the correlations. These are all big buckets that people should spend time working on if scalping is something they want to do. This is a little more to the P&L side. Do you come in every day with an idea of do you have a pre-decided amount of points or ticks that you would like to take out of the market based on your experience over the years? Or do you say, hey, I'm going to spend, you know, these 4 hours trading, and then whatever we have, we have? How do you navigate that side of it? Because with me and the little bit of scalping that I did, I felt like I could just sit there all day long. But there were definitely periods of time where it was much easier to get the orders off and to get the orders filled. And then there were periods of time where it felt like I was kind of fighting to try to get out of the trade.
I want 2,000 a day. That's my P&L.
So you have kind of you have a number. You'd like to hit that. Yeah.
You know, it's, I guess, like on scalping, like it's the tortoise and the hare. And I mean, if I go back, I can go back to, I went 18 months is my longest stretch without a losing day.
Let's go.
I went 18 months every day. And this is when I was well over 7 figures in a year. So you can figure out how every day went. My goal is always 2,000 a day. And through that stretch that I had 18 months without a losing day, my goal was $2,000, because $2,000 just keeps me going. It's like, okay, I can still live a nice life on $2,000. And when I see it, I'll go, I mean, I'll absolutely go for the kill. Like, I don't stop. Like, I was seeing the market, you know, phenomenal. We were in a different environment. It was a ZERP environment when that happened. So, you know, everything was under control. We weren't seeing ranges like we had today. Like, I think, I don't know what day I tweeted it. Maybe it was last week. Was it last week? I mean, I just got destroyed on the day. I said, okay, streak's over. I was on like a 40-day streak, not losing money.
That's a good one.
And I mean, I got blistered. I mean, it was just like everything I did. And I'm like, you know, I knew to walk away. And as disciplined as I am, I still make mistakes. And you have to come up, like, another thing with scalping is, hey, it's not you want to shut off after. I never shut off if I make $2,000. You just have to have a goal. You do have to have a goal every day. Because if you say, well, okay, so that means you make $10,000 a week. So you make $2,000 every day. Well, no, I don't make $2,000 every day. That's my goal every day. I'll make $2,000 every day. You might have a really good Monday where I saw the market and I got 16,000, you know, I finished up 16 grand on the day. Well, I'm not foolish enough to think I'm going to make 16,000 tomorrow.
Right.
Because if I go for that 16,000 goal, it doesn't work. I'm going to lose. So it keeps you in check. It's two, tortoise in the hair. The days you see the market, you go for the kill.
And I like that.
I do too.
I like that because you're not letting a goal define. I think one of the challenges we've talked about before with daily goals is that people are like, if someone's like, oh, 2,000 is my goal, I hit 2000, I cut the screens off. That's not the right way to treat a goal. It's that's your, hey, we're striving towards something, but when we get there, that's not the finish line. If we're seeing the market, great. Then it's time to step on the gas pedal. It's time to lean in.
And the other side of that too is if you don't hit your goal, but you executed flawlessly, like that's still, can't feel bad about that day. That's a good day. It just, the market didn't give it to you.
Yeah, just like the story you told about being down so much. Mm-hmm. And then, it was an amazing trading day. You finished red, but way less red than you could have been, right? So you count that as a win.
Right. I mean, that's the most important thing is to say, like, I mean, I have a set of rules. Like, I don't know where I threw my notebook. That was one of the things I chucked. like I said, so I mean, I have this notebook. I've had it. I've got like 40 or 50 of these things with writings in them. Everything through my time. I have a set of rules. I know what my rules are. If I break my rules, that's when I get mad. I never get mad at the market. It's never the market's fault. Market's going to do what it's going to do. Market's going to do what it's going to do.
That's a really good perspective.
Yeah.
And it's never wrong.
Right. The market's never wrong. And anyone who ever thinks they're smarter than the market, I got a newsflash for you. You're not. The market's always going to win. Hey, I might make a great call. I nailed that Fed fund call. I mean, I absolutely nailed it. But you know what? The next Fed fund trade I'm going to put on, I'm going to get in early. It's going to go against me because that's what they normally do. And I'm going to have to trade around it. But as long as I follow my rules and don't say, oh my God, I'm a golden god. I just called the nut high in the January Fed fund. I basically called the nut high. If I go, I'm going to do that again, dude, that thing's going to be so far against me. It's not even going to, it's like, hey, keep yourself in check. Here's the goal. Here's the rules. Stay in line. And everything falls into place.
I love that, man.
We've hit on a bunch of stuff, and we definitely got into part of the conversation here that's super exciting. I love this side of listening to you talk about stuff. If we reeled it back, we did get a question here. Someone said,
"There's a few of them in here. I got a list."
There's a few questions. Yeah,
fire away.
So, well, I guess how much weight do you give the spread up, down, ticking relative to the last traded price?
And I think we covered JM's question, right?
Yeah, we hit JM's question, yeah. So the question is, how much weight would you give to the spread upticking, downticking relative to the last traded price when it's moving?
So like the bid and offer is he asking for?
Yeah.
Oh, that's average. I mean, you have to be acutely aware of what the bid offer is at all times. Like you have to understand this is where learning icebergs and whatnot are. Like – there's sometimes you're going to go, okay, well, Jeff, you got long here at 08. 08 went down to 50. Why won't you scratch there? Well, I saw an iceberg. I knew that guy was going to reload. I'm constantly paying attention to bid offer. And where that does, now, this is why you have to be in tune to what the 10-year ultra and the ultras are doing.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm watching and I know 08's got an iceberg on it, but I'm watching the 10-year ultra down tick two ticks, I'm going to go, well, wait a second. Now I'm watching the ultras go down two ticks. I don't care if there's an iceberg there or not. I'm out. But now in the same sense, it goes down to 50 and I'm watching the ultra bond. And they look like they're going up. They look like they're going up. Well, I'm gonna let it breathe here because that's where the correlations come into effect. But yes, I do look at the size of the bid offer all day, and it's a game figuring out who's real, who's not. Does the guy really want to buy 800 here? Does he really want to buy 1,000? Or is he goosing the market right now? So you have to be extremely tuned in to what the market is doing, like on those bid and offers. That's a phenomenal question because yes, I do pay attention all day.
Yeah,
that's exactly what they are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think in the same vein, the idea of scratches, you talked a little bit of detail last time about how you would kind of get free looks, get into a position with bonds and get a free look and either possibly scratch, which is what you said happens with most of your, you know, you hope to get into a trade to be able to scratch because that's a win for you, right?
Yes.
Could you talk about the mechanics of that, of a trade like that? Just describe a scenario where you get into a position, get a free look, and you get to make the decision to scratch or get filled for that one tick.
A lot of it, I mean, most of my free looks are always based on those correlations. It's really, what are the 10, what are those two markets doing? And, you know, coupled with the delta. Now, typically when I'm getting free looks, I'm really not looking at the delta because the delta isn't really going to change right there in that moment when I'm watching the, you know, the 10s and the 10-year, I mean, the ultras. It's not going to change. It's really, what are those markets doing? Do they have a strong bid? Is somebody coming in there buying them? And that's why I'll never center on my Dom, because if I'm looking, again, we're 8-9 and I'm watching and I see, wait, the ultra bond is up a tick. The bid is bigger than the offer. You know, there's 700 on their bid, only 200 on the offer in the ultra bond. And then I look at the 10-year ultra and it's like, it's 400 versus 100. I'm going to assume they're going to keep going up. So I'm going to make that assumption. So now I'm looking, all right, when do I want to buy these nines?
So when you say you never recenter your Dom, so when you do your work and you decide which ones are correlated, you line up the prices so they're right next to each other, and now you can see how much they're diverging.
Yes.
Oh, that's brilliant.
So I keep the bonds. I keep the bonds. I know where they are. And now I'm looking. And then once I get into said trade, I don't touch my screen. I don't recenter because I need to know, hey, so how I do it as I add up the boxes, I'm like, all right, there's three tick strength here. So the ultra bond's up two, the 10-year ultra's up one. There's three tick strength to where this bond bid is. Hey, now it went to five. It's an automatic buy.
Right.
I'm lifting those nines. And then I'm watching what those two are doing. And everything is looking at the size of the bid and offers. I'm constantly on the bid and offer. And it's tricky because there's a lot of BS that goes on.
I really like looking at the bid and offer size. I think that there's...
You have to look at it.
Man, that's crazy, dude.
All right. Any other questions here in the chat? And Baba, you got anything else you want to touch on here?
Well, I think just to, you know, to summarize in closing, or I don't know if we're closing, but at least to summarize where we are, there seems to be like some big values that kind of overarch the idea of scalping. And a lot of it seems to be rooted in the discipline to do and execute in the places where you perceive your edge and to stay the heck off of it when you don't have that. And then everything about your screen setups, your DOMs, your time and sales, your deltas, your everything that you're watching is all, it all needs to be organized to serve that one purpose. I mean, the specificity that Jeff has about how he wants the stuff to be and be set, that's all part of his edge. And so while I would say if you're exploring scalping, you may set it up differently, but I think you should be as specific, probably as consistent and specific as he would, you know, as he is with his. And I just find it interesting that you're quick to point out the things that you don't do. Like that awareness of what you don't do, or the type of trades that you don't take, or the type of scenario that doesn't fit for you. I think that's as valuable as knowing what you do want to do, if not more so, right? I mean, being super clear on what you are not gives you clarity as to what you are.
It's all about discipline to exactly what you're looking for. You can never get mad, and you get faked out all the time in the market. I mean, it happens to everyone. Like if in that scenario there was a plus five, you know, in the other two ultra markets, and I went to buy them and I missed an iceberg on the offer, you don't get mad. You have to adjust real quick. Like, you stay in the discipline, because I know the more times that it goes plus five, well, I'm going to catch the edge. I'm going to get my free look, which is all I'm after. I'm going to get the free look 85% of the time. I'm going to have a free look.
Yeah.
And the times I'm wrong, just eat it. You know, you try not to eat it. But again, that goes to a discipline. How do you eat? So I bought I tried to buy nines and the nines stayed offered.
Mm-hmm.
And, if you don't put it in right away, and there's sometimes I think I'm right still. I don't put it in right away because I'm like, well, I'm right. And then all of a sudden there's 700 there. You're like, okay, now you're in trouble. Because, there's an iceberg there. You had a shot to get behind 50. Now I'm behind 700. Now you got to decide what you're going to do. Because now it's all about not missing that, eating that one tick.
I like that. Unfortunately, folks, it's time to wrap up for today, but that's okay because we are always putting out new content. Give Two-Year Flipper a follow on Twitter. Watch out for his upcoming appearance on Crudelli's podcast sometime in the future. Can I talk about that, or is that?
Sure. I forgot what day it is, but it's the second or third Monday in May.
I'm excited for that, man. You're going to have a lot of fun. Crudelli's an awesome guy. We'll be back soon with another exciting episode, but till then, help us spread the word. Share this episode with your friends. Have a great day. This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only. It does not constitute financial or investment advice and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations. Produced by China Shop Productions.